Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker is delivering his annual budget address today. We'll hear from budget experts and people in the field of education about the current state of Illinois' finances and what they'll be listening for today. Plus, later this hour, we'll check in with Illinois Public Radio State House reporter Brian Mackey to hear how officials on both sides of the aisle are reacting to the news that President Trump commuted the prison sentence of former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich.
The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WGLT in Normal, WNIJ in DeKalb, and WCBU in Peoria.
That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay tuned. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Brian Moline. Coming up later this hour...
There's more deserving people who are in the Federal Bureau of Prisons who could use relief from this president other than Rod Blagojevich.
That's Illinois House GOP leader Jim Durkin reacting to the news yesterday that President Trump commuted the prison sentence of former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich. We'll find out how Illinois officials on both sides of the aisle are reacting to that news with Illinois Public Radio State House reporter Brian Mackey. But first, current Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker delivers his annual budget address to the General Assembly today. In just a bit, some people involved in education will tell us what they'll be listening for in the governor's speech. Right now, what does Illinois' fiscal situation look like after the first year of J.B. Pritzker's administration, and how does it compare to what he inherited from his predecessor, Bruce Rauner? Here to discuss that with us is Amanda Cass. She's the Associate Director of the Government Finance Research Center at the University of Illinois Chicago. Amanda, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Also with us is Lawrence Massal. He's the president of the Civic Federation, an independent, nonpartisan government research organization that provides analysis and recommendations on government finance issues for the Chicago region and the state of Illinois. Lawrence, welcome back to the 21st.
Thanks for having me.
My first question is for both of you. Lawrence, we'll start with you. As we talk here today, how would you rate the fiscal health of the state of Illinois right now and compared to where it was a year ago?
I think a fair assessment of the state of Illinois' fiscal health would be that it is stable. Unfortunately, it is stable at a very low level, so we have one of the worst rated credits in the United States of any state. But it has shown improvement from where it was in the previous years in that Governor Pritzker was able to get a budget passed within the requisite time during the previous fiscal year and get the legislature to approve it with some bipartisan support. So things have stabilized for the state of Illinois. Unfortunately, the condition, the credit rating, the large number of unpaid bills of over $7 billion is still very much a problem for not just the vendors of the state, but anybody who relies on the state of Illinois for services or anybody who's impacted by the services they provide.
And Amanda, same question to you. You know, how would you rate the fiscal health of the state right now and compared to where it was a year ago?
I'm in large agreement with Lawrence. I think Illinois has stabilized. It's a bit kind of treading water in terms of its finances. And I think part of the important context is that prior to Governor Pritzker, in his first budget, the state went several years without a budget. It created a lot of problems for the state's finances in terms of a very large backlog of unpaid bills, cuts to services. And so I think the state has had a big hole to dig itself out of. So while it's stable, it's still not a kind of 180 turnaround.
Sure. The upcoming budget year starting July 1st will be an interesting one. You know, the governor is a big advocate for the graduated income tax, which will go before voters this fall as a constitutional amendment. But even if that passes, any additional revenue from that proposal wouldn't be available until next year at the earliest. Lawrence, as you look at the upcoming fiscal year, how do you think the governor and General Assembly will try to navigate some of the fiscal challenges the state faces in the upcoming budget year?
I think the governor is going to try to approach on a two-pronged path. That is, he wants to build, as he says, a bridge to the graduated income tax vote in November. His proposal, which will be before the voters in November, would increase state revenues by about $3.7 billion. But it, as you point out, it won't be available for this fiscal year, and for the one coming up, they can at best expect to get some money in the second half of the fiscal year. As a result, it's somewhat surprising, or not surprising, that the projected deficit, according to the governor's Office of Management and Budget, is that they have about a $1.7 billion projected fiscal year 21 deficit. That's an enormous amount of spending to be out of balance, and that's spending pressure. So the governor is going to, at noon today, lay out his proposal to balance, to present a balanced budget that only relies on available revenue for the state of Illinois. The state law requires the governor to propose a budget with known revenue, not things in the future. Previous governors have gotten around that a little bit by presenting two different paths, whether if they, when they were promoting a tax increase. It's expected that Governor Pritzker will have at least some language in there that points out how much better things would be with the graduated income tax if they had that revenue. But the actual budget that he will be presenting is required to be balanced under the state constitution, at least to the best of his ability to propose a balanced budget. So I think it will be a difficult task for the governor today to balance both what he, where he wants the state of Illinois to go and what resources he has to apply to the state of Illinois today.
Amanda, speaking of the graduated income tax, most, if not all, Republicans are against this proposal, and many of them have used the slippery slope argument that, that once the graduated tax amendment passes, that it will be easier for lawmakers to raise income taxes across all income levels in the state. And I know you've been doing some research into this question. What have you found?
Yeah, so I've been working on that exact question with my colleague, David Merriman, and we've been putting together data on state income tax policy across the 50 states and looking at this question of, is it the case that states with graduated structures change their tax rates more often than states with flat structures? And our preliminary analysis, and I want to emphasize that it's preliminary, indicates that that's not the case. We're still looking at the question more, but right now we don't find evidence that states with graduated rates have tax increases or tax changes more generally more often than states with flat taxes. And our preliminary analysis is on the Government Finance Research Center's website if anyone wants to look at it more.
All right, great. You know, we certainly can't discuss Illinois' finances without mentioning public pensions. And one reason Democrats have been pushing for additional revenue is because of the rising amount of contributions the state is making to those pensions. Amanda, can you just give us a quick summary of the current pension situation here in Illinois?
Sure. So Illinois has some of the most underfunded pension systems in the United States. Collectively, the five pension systems are only about 40% funded, meaning that for every $1 of a pension liability, the state right now only has 40 cents in the bank. To get the level of funding up, the state has a funding plan that's supposed to get the systems to 90% funded by 2045. But to do that, the state's contributions each year to the pension systems are going to have to increase on average by about 3% from year to year. So making the payments is an ongoing fiscal pressure for the state.
And Lawrence, could you give us just a little bit of the backstory here? How did we get to where we are with the current pension situation, with the pensions being so underfunded and this increasing contribution from the state?
So Illinois got to this place where it has now, as was pointed out, over $130 billion. And those are just the state pension funds. That doesn't include the police and fire or the municipal pension funds or county pension funds. These are just the state employees. Basically, the path for all of the funds has been the same. The state established pension funds and then did not require actuarial contributions to those funds. Historically, the state, before 1995, basically put money into the state pension funds according to what was left over when the General Assembly had finished prioritizing other spending. In 1995, the state went on a 50-year plan to get to 90% funding. It was expected that that would be a floor for funding of the pension funds. It ended up being the ceiling for which the state contributes its pension funds. At the same time, the state was under contributing to the pension funds. It was adding benefits, increasing benefits, and it established in the 1980s an automatic 3% compounded increase for the pensioners that happens regardless of the rate of inflation. That's probably one of the single most expensive benefits Illinois has that no other state has, a 3% statutorily provided and compounded benefit. The state legislature has tried to reverse that. They passed legislation to diminish that 3% compounded for existing employees and retirees. The Illinois Supreme Court ruled that they could not do that. The court did not provide much direction for what the state could do to bring down that enormous amount. And so the various other ideas have been floated, including changing the state constitution, including bargaining with the employees to accept a lesser benefit than that. Those things have had a very uneven path in the General Assembly. So as Amanda points out, you basically have to keep putting more and more money in these state pension funds just to keep them from running out of money. The governor had a commission last year, Governor Pritzker, to look at consolidating the local police and fire pension funds. That commission ended up only recommending the consolidation of the investment oversight of those funds. It's expected to have some significant savings, but not as much as many would like. The other area that was not included was the city of Chicago and their pension funds, or the Chicago Public Schools, which is the only school district in Illinois that operates its own pension system. So there are a lot of areas the General Assembly and the governor could be working on for pension consolidation, and there's hope that before the legislature adjourns, that there will be things that the General Assembly and governor agree on that could provide some property tax relief. Because without any property tax relief, going to the voters in November with a very large income tax increase creates the risk that there may not be as much support as the proponents would hope.
Yeah. Amanda, I wanted to ask you a couple things that Lawrence just mentioned here. You know, he mentioned the state combining hundreds of smaller pension funds for public safety workers into one larger fund. I know you've done some research into this as well. You know, is that a good idea? How much will this actually help in the grand scheme of things?
I think in the abstract, consolidation makes a lot of sense. What Illinois did is not full consolidation. As Lawrence said, what's going to happen is that the assets of the local police and fire pension systems are going to be pooled together and invested, and that's anticipated to save some savings and potentially create some property tax relief. But there's costs to transitioning from having 650 plus individual funds that manage their own assets to combining them. So I think that the savings are more long-term and there's going to be some upfront costs. So I'm a little cautious on what kind of relief that's going to provide in the short term.
Sure. And one other thing the governor proposed last year, Amanda, was extending the time frame of that so-called pension ramp. Lawrence mentioned, you know, a 90% funding level by the year 2045. What did the governor propose last year, and what ended up happening there?
Right. So he proposed extending the timeline, which would have it saved money in the short term. It creates relief in the current budget and for the next few years, but extending out the timeline costs the state more money in the long term. It was also looked very unfavorably upon by the credit rating agencies, so they kind of walked away from that idea, at least for now. Another item that the governor has talked about in the past, and I'm still waiting to hear about, is this asset transfer. So the idea is to transfer one of the state's assets to the state pension systems, which would boost the finances of the pension systems. It's kind of like a injection of cash all at once into the pension systems. They put together a task force on that issue, but I haven't seen anything lately. So I'm going to be looking at the governor's budget to see if there's anything to that in it.
Just a couple of minutes left here. I want to ask you both what specific things you'll be listening for from the governor today. Lawrence, let's start with you.
Well, so ideally, we'd like to hear from the governor his plan for moving Illinois forward and certainly to not move backward. The governor, in a preview of his budget, said he was going to increase funding for the Department of Children and Family Services by about $140 million, around $150 to $170 million. That's a significant amount of money, and they technically may have that surplus because the governor has done some department consolidations or will be proposing some department consolidations and some other efficiencies. The bigger question is how, if the graduated income tax doesn't pass in November, what's plan B for the state of Illinois? How will the state be able to pay its bills? It has a large amount of debt outstanding. It has a large amount of unfunded pension liabilities that will continue to grow. And even with a graduated income tax that the governor proposes, those pressures are going to continue to exist. So what we're looking for is how will the governor steer the state financially, and what impact will that have on the local governments? The big pressure for property taxes relief is coming because in many parts of the state of Illinois, there is the perception that home values are declining at the same time property taxes are increasing, and that is a very negative impact.
Sure. Amanda, about 30 seconds. How about you? What are you listening for?
Well, in addition to the things that Lawrence just mentioned, I think the two big things I'm going to be listening for are what the governor has to say about pensions, if there's any mention about the asset transfer, and if he has any remarks about property taxes. While property taxes aren't part of the state budget, they're, of course, a huge issue for the local governments.
Amanda Cass with the University of Illinois Chicago, Lawrence Massol, president of the Civic Federation. Thanks so much for both of you joining us here on the 21st.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Moline. You're listening to special coverage from the 21st leading up to Governor J.B. Pritzker's budget address, which you can hear on many of our partner stations coming up at noon. During last year's address, the governor proposed boosting dollars for education in the state by more than $630 million, with most of that money going toward early childhood, K-12, and universities. But Illinois is still about $7 billion short of achieving adequate funding levels for its public schools, according to the State Board of Education. And the governor said last year that the budget was more, quote, constrained than he would have liked due to the state's multi-billion dollar budget shortfall. Our next guests have a stake in the education funding issue and are here to tell us what they have or haven't seen change since the last budget address and what issues they hope the governor highlights in his speech next hour. Christina Pacioni-Zayas is the Associate Vice President of Policy at the Erickson Institute, an education organization focused on early childhood development. She joins us now from the state capitol. Christina, welcome back to the 21st.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Also with us from Chicago, we have Cassie Cresswell. Cassie is the President and Director of Illinois Families for Public Schools. Cassie, welcome to the 21st. Glad to have you with us.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Christina, we'll start with you. You hold several positions in addition to your role with the Erickson Institute. You're on the Illinois State Board of Education. You were part of the Educational Success Committee for Governor Pritzker's transition team when he took office last year. How would you rate the past year under Governor Pritzker when it comes to early childhood education?
I'd say that we've made some significant progress. I mean, I think, first of all, the fact that it is totally infused in the public discourse, the importance of early care and education, that's a win. And then, you know, we certainly put some strength behind that by increasing investments in the Early Childhood Block Grant, as well as early intervention on the Department of Human Services side. So we've, you know, over this past year, I have to say we've made some progress.
You know, last year, the governor proposed funding the Early Childhood Block Grant at $594 million, an increase of $100 million from the year before. What sort of programs does that funding go toward, Christina?
Yes. So the Early Childhood Block Grant is basically the state-funded birth to five programs that are administered by the Illinois State Board of Education. That comprises the Prevention Initiative, which services children and their families 0 to age 3, Preschool for All, which is for 4- and 5-year-olds, and then Preschool for All Expansion, which is kind of the 2.0 or Cadillac version of Preschool for All.
Okay, and have we been able to see the impact of that increased funding, or is it too soon to tell?
We are able to see some gains here and there. I mean, we've obviously increased access, and we are definitely trying to really chip away at improving quality. And a lot of that is really predicated upon how we support the early care and education workforce. We have an issue around compensation where we have a lot of our early childhood educators who are eligible for public aid, almost 50% of them. If you think about what they earn, it's actually you have bank tellers, manicurists, and dog walkers who make more money than our children's most important educators in the system. And so we really need to think about how do we deliberately invest in raising compensation for those educators so that we can retain them, because we also have an issue with retention. We have 3 times the turnover rate in early childhood. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how this budget can be very deliberate in how we're supporting our workforce, because without the workforce, we wouldn't have early care and education.
Sure. And, you know, in his budget address last year, the governor did say that investing in early childhood education was, quote, the single most important education policy decision government can make, and it has proven to provide a significant return on investment, end quote. Are you expecting to get a similar commitment or similar funding from Governor Pritzker this year?
Well, I'm hoping that he will adopt the recommended budget from the Illinois State Board of Education. We recommended a $100 million increase. We know that we can even do more. The advocate community was really pushing for a $150 million increase. And so we're hoping to have, you know, that type of outcome. There's a few things I think we need to pay attention to. In December, Governor Pritzker appointed a early childhood care and education funding commission that really was going to be tasked with doing 3 things. One, defining what is the scope of a high-quality birth-to-five system. 2, what would that cost? And 3, what's the mechanism to actually fund it? And so that commission will be working for the next year, and at this point will be delivering a year from now their recommendations so that we can really begin to think a little bit more expansive in terms of the depth of investment that we need to make. Because as you quoted him, it is the most important investment we can make in society, because it really is seeding our future.
Cassie Cresswell is also with us from Illinois Families for Public Schools. And Cassie, I'm curious what the big issues that your organization has focused on over the past year when it comes to education in Illinois.
I mean, I think really for every public school parent, the thing that comes down to a core issue is funding. Almost anything you want to do in schools or want schools to be like depend on funding. And the truth is, we're billions under what we should be funding schools in Illinois. And if we were just adding the $350 million a year to state funding that the new formula requires, that would take 3 decades to get to where we're supposed to be. So that's like a generation and a half of childhood. So parents, always it comes down to what resources are available for schools. That said, I think there's a lot of stuff that could be done in schools that is either virtually no cost or it would save money. And the truth is that there's things like reducing standardized testing that would save dollars. And there's things like providing children with sufficient amounts of unstructured playtime in the day, which is essentially a virtually no cost intervention and has huge benefits for children's physical, mental, and social health. we're working on an initiative right now in the General Assembly to require 60 minutes of unstructured playtime every day for children K through 8, and that's early childhood ends at third grade, and middle childhood goes to age 12. And play is something that's super important for that whole stretch. And I know that the governor said in his address in January that he wanted Illinois to be the best state in the nation for families raising young children. And what parents really want for their children is to have time to play and not be subjecting them to endless standardized tests. And so those are some things you can do that are budget neutral.
Cassie, back to funding for schools. What are you hoping to hear from the governor this year? Last year, the governor did add more dollars to education, but as you mentioned, you don't think it's gone far enough.
Say we wanted to close the gap of adequacy within a decade, we'd need about $800 million a year added. Whatever we can do to get close to that is what parents actually want and what communities should be wanting for their public schools. There's the tax credit scholarship program that got passed with the new evidence-based funding formula, which is really sort of a voucher program. That takes money away from public schools, and I think public school parents would like those dollars back in public schools. So that's something that the governor has talked about in the past that didn't end up changing last year, but we're still hoping that he keeps that campaign promise on that issue.
And Cassie, you mentioned getting more playtime for K-12 schools, particularly that K through 8 level. Why is that so important? What benefits come from kids having that unstructured playtime?
It's really crucial for everything from physical activity and the health benefits from physical activity that you get and the gross motor skills that you develop. But it also is super important for social-emotional development of children, both the social interaction skills that you have when you're not being, when you have the agency and autonomy to play. That is something that where you learn how to cooperate and lead and share. And also just the mental health benefits of having a break. Really, teachers and parents and kids find that when you have a sufficient break, you come back to class, you can actually learn more in that time that you have.
And Christina, bringing you back in here, do you find that as well on the early childhood level, just the importance of that unstructured playtime for kids?
Absolutely. Play is the work of children. Children, learn by doing, by applying, by they have an opportunity to kind of flex their social emotional skills by taking turns, by negotiating roles, by imagining. It's some of the most important part of their development. And I think what's actually really wonderful that's happening in our state with the Kindergarten Individual Development Survey, there's a lot of coaching and support and technical assistance for teachers to really be able to use the information that they get from the observations that they collect on children and figure out ways to integrate a lot of the play theory in kindergarten. In fact, there's a school district that is incorporating play all the way up until second grade. And what they're showing is that the academic outcomes as a result of that play being implemented in those early elementary years is that the kids are performing off the charts. So we do know that there is a foundation and a research base that will support it.
And Christina, what will you be listening for today? What are the most important policy priorities for you as you listen to the governor's budget address?
Of course, the investment in the early childhood block grant, the increasing that investment. I know that he recently announced some investments that we'll hear more about today in terms of universal home visiting, which is a program for pregnant and parenting families of children 0 to 5 to really support them in developing their child's optimal development. And so That should result in some increases in the Department of Human Services funded programs for home visiting. I'm looking also for some investments, particularly that we recommended at the State Board, with elevating educators, recruitment, retention, recognition, and specifically a deliberate set aside in early childhood so that we can start to chip away at these workforce issues and diversify our workforce so our workforce can represent and reflect the communities in which they serve.
Christina Paccione-Zayas is the Associate Vice President of Policy at the Erickson Institute, an education organization focused on early childhood development. We also have been speaking with Cassie Cresswell. She's the President and Director of Illinois Families for Public Schools. Both of you, thanks for speaking to us today on the 21st.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
I want to bring another voice into the conversation here. Chuck Blyer is the superintendent for Wabash Community Unit Schools, District 348 in Mount Carmel, which is in the southeastern part of our state. Superintendent Blyer, welcome back to the 21st.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We just mentioned now that Governor Pritzker has increased education funding in the state by about $630 million from his budget in the current fiscal year. So far, what kind of a difference has that money made in your district?
It's been a tremendous benefit. It really has. For many, many years, we've been at a spiral as far as where we were basically taking money out of our local funds and being tapped heavily, so we weren't able to invest. We were just hoping to get by year to year, and then that led to where we were not being able to retain teachers or not be able to retain programs. Now we're able to start new programs, and we're trying right now to, of course, recruit new teachers, which is a big problem because we have such a teacher shortage in this state due to the downward spiral of funding for over a decade, but the direction is pointed in the right way.
We've talked with superintendents like yourself on the show many times over the past few years, and one theme that has consistently come up is the idea of stability from our state government. What's your message to Springfield about how a reliable state government affects students?
It impacts them immensely. They probably don't see it as the administration sees it, but when you cannot continually improve your facilities, your grounds, train your staff, bring in new administrators, you get basically a falling behind effect, and it falls back onto them. Now, as far as programs go, it may not affect that student at that one time, but as they come through their educational career, there will be less and less opportunity for those programs because they didn't know they had a shot at them. So the goal is to keep programs for a long period of time, and programs like even woods and mechanics and things that have fallen off by the wayside, art programs, those are starting to get a little more traction now. We can start those back up, but they would probably be the first to go if the state were to go down another cycle, and we would lose the opportunity for another generation of those students to go through those programs.
You touched on the teacher shortage and how dire that situation is for both students and educators in the state. There are certainly several factors behind that, but one we've also touched on in the past is the general demeaning or degradation of respect for the people who are teachers. Is that something you'd like to see the governor address?
I'd love that. That profession has taken a beating for quite a while. I was really disheartened by our current president calling our schools government schools. I think that's a negative term that was just implied for his own political base. That's not how we consider ourselves. We work very hard to be a well-rounded environment for our students and our families. Our local communities work real hard to support our schools. Our state works really hard to support our schools. The federal government does not support our schools very much. And that was an attack that I didn't like, and I would like to see the governor kind of push back on that a little bit. These are Illinois schools, and we're proud of them, and we're proud of our teachers.
Just about 30 seconds left here, Chuck, but what would you say your number one priority is to hear today from the governor?
Keep the funding going. Our evidence-based funding has made a tremendous impact. We need to keep funding that, pushing this a little bit more every year would give us the freedom to fund, to fix, to improve transportation, on and on and on, that was due to well over a decade of lack of funding.
Chuck Blyer is the superintendent for Wabash Community Unit Schools, District 348 in Mount Carmel. Chuck, thanks so much for joining us today on the 21st.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Moline. The Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker is set to deliver his annual budget address at the top of the hour, which you'll hear on many of our partner stations. And joining us now from the State House, where he'll be listening to the governor's budget address, is Brian Mackey. He's the State House reporter for Illinois Public Radio. Brian, great to have you as always here on the 21st.
Brian, great to be with you, Brian.
And we'll get to the budget address in just a moment, but first I need to ask you about the big political news of the last 24 hours.
There's big political news?
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
Budget all the time here.
That, of course, is President Trump commuting the sentence of former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich. Could you just quickly catch us up? What was the governor convicted of doing?
He was convicted of a number of acts of public corruption, including shaking down a children's hospital for a campaign donation before he did, agree to a change in state policy that they were seeking. There was another one in which he had attempted to shake down a racetrack owner, again, in order for a change in state policy. And the most sort of headline one that grabbed the most international attention at the time was he tried to sell then-president-elect Barack Obama's U.S. Senate seat to somebody who might be willing to sort of hook him up. He famously said on one of the wiretap recordings, it's time for him to start putting himself and his family first, with an expletive I did not say in that sentence.
How long was Blagojevich's sentence and how much of it did he serve?
It was 14 years, and he served roughly half of that. He would have been eligible for parole at some point sooner than 14 years, most likely. By all accounts, he was a reasonably well-behaved inmate. At one point, he was playing in a band, teaching history at the federal prison where he was staying in Colorado. But this commutation of his sentence basically frees him early. Now, it's important to note he is still considered a felon. It was not a pardon. President Trump did pardon some people yesterday. This basically just released him from prison. He is still a convicted felon. And beyond that, here in Illinois, at least, he is barred from ever seeking a public office. When the Illinois House of Representatives voted twice, actually, to impeach him, because it came at the end of one General Assembly and the beginning of a new two-year assembly, they voted to impeach him, and the Senate voted to remove him from office. They also voted separately to bar him from any future public office in the state of Illinois, or of the state of Illinois, which means he can't run for mayor or county board member or library board or anything else that is a creature of the state. Potentially, if he really wanted to, I guess he could run for U.S. Senate or Congress again. We'll have to see what's in his future.
What has the reaction been to this news at the State House?
Mostly disappointment. I mean, there are some people who think the sentence of 14 years was a lot. It was more than twice what former Governor George Ryan got for his public corruption sentence. But, you know, then again, there were wiretaps in this case, and Blagojevich was pretty brazen. And Blagojevich was and remains, interestingly, unapologetic. Even this morning, he talked about, as I guess this was either at the airport or as he was going to his house, according to the Chicago Tribune, about the shakedown that was done to me, he said. So whether it was in the courtroom as he was being sentenced or today, he has been unapologetic about, he has said he's sorry it happened to him, but he has not taken any responsibility for the wrongdoing that a jury of his peers found he had done. And the State House reaction basically was generally unhappy with this.
Yeah, it's interesting, Brian. As you well know, Republicans and Democrats in Springfield don't agree on a lot. It certainly seems that one thing most of them agree on is Rob Blagojevich.
Yeah, I mean, he was a terrible, terrible presence in state government. Not just, and it really goes beyond the corruption. I've made the argument before that the thing that he should be most remembered for is not the sort of petty corruption or the grand corruption even, but it's his complete and utter mismanagement of the state. And I think it's fitting that he comes home on the time of the budget address, because Illinois is still digging out from the very deep hole that he created in state finances by refusing to reconcile the very simple proposition of, we have this much money coming in, therefore we can spend that amount of money, and he would never balance that. He would never either agree to cut spending or raise revenue in order to meet that. And one of the big things he did was shorting the pension systems. You know, when Governor Blagojevich, the fiscal year he took office, I looked this up this morning, there was a $43 billion unfunded liability in the state pensions. A lot, but still, you know, somewhat manageable, people thought. Now that is $137 billion. That's a jump of almost $100 billion. And much of that happened on account of decisions made in the Blagojevich administration, with the willing acceptance of the General Assembly, I should add, to short the pension systems, their required state contributions.
As you mentioned, the current governor, J.B. Pritzker, is set to deliver his annual budget address today. You know, you mentioned when we talked before the State of the State address last month that you actually find the budget address to be more informative than the State of the State. Can you remind us why that is?
Yeah, you know, there's a line that Joe Biden has attributed to his father. I'm going to paraphrase it. I don't have it directly in front of me. But he says, "Don't tell me what your values are. Show me your spending plan and I'll tell you what your values are." And it's the same thing with all of us. I think, you know, we can say, yeah, I'm going to get fit this year and I'm going to stop eating unhealthily. But then if you look at my credit card statement or bank statement and it shows more visits to McDonald's and not really paying for a gym membership or anything like that, well, then you can know where my priorities truly are. And that's the same thing with state government. You know, state government does not do a lot the way that, I mean, the federal government has an army, right? It sends people out to do things. It has aid workers. State government has some of that. It doesn't have an army. It has some of that. But most of what state government does is take money from some people and give it to somebody else for some purpose. So it takes billions of dollars from taxpayers and the federal government, and it passes them on to healthcare providers and schools and things like that. So from that standpoint, how the state chooses to spend its money is where you can really tell what state officials value.
And what are we expecting the governor to say about his proposed budget today?
One of the things that we're going to be watching for is how he plans to deal with the proposed graduated income tax constitutional amendment. Just to remind listeners, anyone who can vote this fall will be asked, should Illinois end the requirement in the state constitution that it has a flat income tax? That's where you and I and Governor Pritzker and the people working at a fast food restaurant all pay the same, just under 5% of our income to the state. And what this graduated system would do, if the voters approve of it, would be to say people at lower levels of the income would pay less, people at higher levels would pay more, almost up to 8% for couples that make more than $1 million a year. And the question everybody's wondering is, you know, if that goes through, the money would start coming in January, which is halfway through the budget year. That runs from July 1st to June 30th. Will the governor plan to spend that money in this budget, or will he find some way of working around that to say, well, the budget's balanced, you know, maybe we won't, you know, here's what we could do if we get this money in? How he deals with that question is something most people are going to be listening for.
You know, you spoke to lawmakers on both sides of the aisle yesterday. Let's start with the Republicans. They're a super minority in both chambers of the General Assembly. But what budget ideas will they be pushing for this session?
They are a super minority, but it's notable that for the previous 3 years, going back to the budget that ended the impasse, it has been a bipartisan budget here in Illinois. There were a number of Republicans who crossed Bruce Rauner and worked with Democrats to raise taxes and end the two-year budget stalemate that had crippled Illinois government. And in the following 2 years, the last budget under Governor Rauner and the first budget under Governor Pritzker, Republicans were able to put some votes on the budget, and they say they got some of their priorities respected. So they think, as you know, the mantra of Republicans is waste, fraud, and abuse, right? They think that the state should pursue some more efficiencies, trying to cut costs here and there. The governor has touted some ideas he had for that and some things he's already done. He wants to combine the Department of Labor with the Illinois Department of Employment Security. There are business groups that push back against that idea. But basically, Republicans say they're hoping to hear some ideas for cuts and efficiencies. They have, at least as a political party, been united in their opposition to the graduated income tax. Polling that we here at NPR Illinois have done actually shows that Republican voters are not as uniform, and almost half of them are okay with at least the general idea of the wealthy should pay a higher income tax rate than other people. But as politicians, they are steadfastly opposed to that. And House Republican Leader Jim Durkin has said if the governor comes through with a budget that counts on that money from the graduated income tax, the Republicans won't be able to support it.
As for Democrats, unlike some past administrations like Rob Blagojevich, which we discussed a little bit, the governor's office and both chambers of the General Assembly seemed to work pretty well together last year. What are legislative Democrats saying about this year's budget?
You know, they're basically saying, let's wait and see what the governor has to say. It would be hard to imagine them sort of not coming together in the end. I mean, there has been a long honeymoon. The governor and the legislature have been working cooperatively in a way that we have not really seen in Illinois. I mean, on a few issues here and there, but this level of executive and legislative branch harmony, you really, I think, probably have to go back to the George Ryan administration in the late 90s, early 2000s, where you had a governor and majority parties in both the House and Senate that were working together in that way. So I think that, again, they are, as everyone says, with these sort of things, well, we have to wait to hear what the governor says, and we're cautiously optimistic, but they definitely do not want to see cuts. It's just how the governor is going to walk that line about, you know, this graduated income tax.
You know, one of the things that I've also heard Republicans discuss a bit is that they're a little bit unhappy with this property tax relief task force that the governor set up as part of the fair tax proposal. You know, they're looking at ways to help bring maybe some property tax relief to Illinois taxpayers, kind of in exchange maybe for increasing income taxes. Has anything concrete come out of that task force as of this point?
You know, I think we're still waiting for the big proposals on property taxes. It's really a zero. I mean, there are voices who say you can cut property taxes without increasing state spending, because we need to remember that most property taxes in Illinois pay for education. And so if you reduce the amount of money that schools get from property taxes, they say they're going to need more money from other sources, namely the state income tax and sales tax, probably. Now, there are voices out there that would say, well, you know, you could do efficiencies in local government, which is sort of code for saying reduce the amount of union power that the teachers have to bargain over their salary and benefits and things like that. And Governor Rauner made that a centerpiece of his administration, and it went nowhere. So I think that the thinking is that is a pretty unrealistic proposal. So if you are going to reduce property taxes, that means you probably would need to come up with more money from the state. And again, that is something that's where you begin to get the disagreements between the parties. It's easy to say, oh, yes, let's do something about property taxes. But when you actually try to figure out what and find something that a majority of people here in the state house can agree to, that becomes a much more difficult prospect.
And it sounds like really the undercurrent for this entire legislative session will kind of be this battle over the graduated income tax. Governor Pritzker and his allies really pushing hard for it, and Republicans really pushing against it.
Yeah, although it's this weird thing where I wonder how much the governor is actually going to say about it. And certainly his staff has been very reticent because this is going to be a political question. This is something that's going to be on the ballot next November. And therefore, if a government official is out there saying, hey, vote for this political question, that could potentially be an ethics violation. And this has happened in the past where a communications aide to a former governor got dinged for an ethics violation for sort of doing advocacy work on state time. So it's this weird situation where a lot of people here are sort of uncomfortable about the idea of promoting this from their government position. So it'll be interesting to hear how they walk that line. Ultimately, though, we do know the governor and Democrats are pushing for this. And so I have no doubt that they will find other ways of getting their message out.
Just about a minute left here, Brian, but just a couple of things on the top of your list that you'll be listening for from the governor today.
Well, how much money does he want to put towards education? There's a state law that says $350 million increase in order to try and get to that equity level. There's been reporting by my colleague Dusty Rhodes and others that, you know, that's still not enough to try and get school funding equitable among the rich districts and poor districts in the state. Also going to be listening for how he plans to handle the pension payments, which are now eating anywhere between 20 and 25% of general revenue spending in Illinois. Does he plan to make the full payment? Will he be doing something to sort of extend out the debt like he had proposed last year? I would say those are two of the big things we'll be listening for.
And that's all the time we have for today. And many of our stations will be bringing you the governor's budget address coming up next. We're produced by Libby Foster, Anna Casey, and Julian Haida. Yunus Alpazan is our intern. Technical direction and engineering from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. I'm Brian Moldy. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening.